Welcome to The Cooler Ring, a podcast for manufacturing marketers brought to you by Cooler Partners. My name is Jeff White, and joining me today is Carmen Perry. Carmen, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, and I think today's conversation is going to be great.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting topic, interesting product. I love when we get to talk about manufactured products that you might not even necessarily think is a thing.
Yeah, which happens more than you think.
Yeah, no, it's I love working in this space just because of that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like an endless turducken rather than there being like three or four layers. Or sometimes I think it's like more like a tinfoil ball or something like that. There's like 4 million of them, but yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So anyway, we should get into it. So without further ado, joining us is Michael Frank. Michael is the Vice President of Marketing and Communications at Arctic Walk-Ins. Welcome to The Cooler Ring, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
Michael, you're very welcome. Thank you for joining us. It's really nice to have you on the show. I want to know a bit more about Arctic Walk-Ins. What do you all do there at the firm? Tell us what you do.
Sure. Arctic Walk-Ins is a 40-year-old company that specializes in custom and quick ship cold storage. So we manufacture walk-in coolers and freezers and combo units for food service and commercial purposes. We have factories on both coasts. We were originally founded in Miami, and we acquired a company here in Los Angeles, where I'm based. And now we have two facilities covering almost all of North America and some countries just outside.
And the applications for walk-in cold storage must be incredibly diverse. My goodness.
Incredibly diverse. Food service is the bread and butter of the business. Food service operations can be anything from a chain restaurant to a mom and pop, but also food service operations at a hospital or a hospitality space, or quite commonly K-12 food service, colleges, universities. Sticking with that, we also do stadiums. And beyond the food service, though, where I think is a lot of engineering feat, we do maritime applications, we do agriculture applications, meat processing, pharmaceutical and biotechs, or cold storage purposes, temperature-controlled rooms. Mm. The list goes on. When I first started, with the company almost a year ago, I had a relationship prior to me being in-house with them. It just opened my eyes in terms of how much value these things bring to small businesses across a number of different industries and sectors.
Now, these are not all just like the refrigerators you would see, just bigger versions, in the appliance stores. But you do have, I believe, some products that are kind of designed as a quick ship item, and then others are custom solutions. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So QuickShip is our blue line. Those are meant for efficient delivery, economic solutions. If you're in a pinch and you need something, a box, either indoor or outdoor, we can deliver one within a matter of days if they're standard sizes. And then the real fun comes with the custom boxes, what we call Signature Series. And that's where, we're engineering for very specific use cases, very specific spaces. If there's a column that we have to build around, if there's a slope in the roof, if there's an outdoor, factor for the Northeast, we take in a snow load requirement, or out here on the West Coast, it's seismic oriented. So there's so much detail and nuance that goes into each one of these, and it's really fun to be a part of.
How did you end up there?
Oh man, long story short, I was running a marketing agency as a managing partner for about 4 years. And when I first started with that agency, they were the first client that I was assigned. So I was essentially their lead strategist on primarily the digital side, but I ended up doing a lot more than that. Branded collateral, trade show, partnerships, the list goes on. And after about 4 years, they brought me in-house to lead channel growth for them. And that was last year. And I was just recently promoted to the VP role of marketing communications. So now overseeing a ton of different, just requirements for the brand and the business across digital, physical, and, all of the dealer relationships that we have as well.
Now, the selfish agency guy in me really wants to just take this conversation down the path of being on the inside versus the outside and all the nuances therein. And I'm only going to state that so that you all keep me from doing it.
There'd be six people who want to hear that episode, and two of them are here.
Exactly. I would like to kind of explore, Michael, a little bit about what it's like to build brand and position a brand when it serves such a diverse category. I mean, on the one hand, you know, food service and for a restaurant perspective, or food service and hospitals, you can make some parallels. But then when you start talking about biotech, pharma, things of that sort, they have very different categories. And it does strike me that maybe I'm just I've watched too much Anthony Bourdain or what have you, but it feels like in some ways the food service industry is onto itself. Like it's like you're either in the club or you're out of the club, and you kind of want to be in it if you're selling to it. Help me understand how you think about that.
Yeah, that's a great point. We have, man, there's so much to unpack there. Food service really is the bread and butter. So that kind of operates with a lot of relationship driven. People have been in the industry for 20, 30 years is what I find. The commercial applications are a little bit newer for us and a little bit harder to break into, but they're still relationship driven. And sometimes these take, you know, months, if not years, to really cultivate and earn the trust. And what I often come across is, you know, there's 40 plus manufacturers of walk-in coolers and freezers in North America alone, right? So we're one of many, and often bidding on projects with a lot of competitors. So when a lot of customers will think of us as a commodity, you know, how do we break apart? And I think it has to come through in the quality of the craftsmanship, the box that we make, the reliability, and the customer support that we also offer, because things do happen, and how do we address them? And I think if we're looking at it from a full sales to support process, then over time, you know, we continue to really stand out amongst the crowd in, quite frankly, what is not always a sexy industry, you know, walk-in cooler manufacturing. It's foamed in place panels with hard rails and steel and aluminum on the outside, right? And a box is a box. And many people consider it just that, but we definitely consider it a lot more.
Do you find that the competition is more fierce in the food service side, and that's what's making the other niches, you know, a really interesting opportunity for you? Or are you seeing the same competition across all of the different verticals you serve?
The competition varies, and I think some excel where others don't. I think food service obviously is something that everyone's going after because it's just so common and so frequent. What we have noticed is there are some competitors that don't want to play in the custom space because of the investment that it takes, whether it's the tech investment or the tooling investment or the manufacturing investment, or quite frankly, just the time investment. That's left us an opportunity, especially on the commercial side most recently, to really extend what we do best and deliver a superior product in the way that they need it. And I think that's where we're seeing a lot of success lately.
This is people that work at Cooler Partners will know exactly what I'm about to ask probably when I start talking about the QSP trap, because I often, people... Manufacturers are a little notorious for saying, you know, when you ask them why people ought to buy from them, they'll say that we have the best quality and the best service delivered by the best people. And I always push back on that a little bit to say, how sustainable is that competitive advantage? To your point, a box is a box. How difficult is it to maintain a quality advantage there? I can see on the custom side, there's a barrier to entry. But how do you go about messaging the benefits of better quality and better service without it sounding like kind of a Me Too play?
Yeah, I appreciate that. And it's a challenge I think we're all facing, and I do as well. We take strides, I think, beyond just quality and craftsmanship and reliability to be an innovator in the space. You know, one of our taglines is engineering reimagined. So we're never just resting on what we do on a daily basis and expecting everyone to believe us. And I think a few things that we've done in the innovative way lately is really around flooring. You know, we've essentially created a floor testing machine, which I understand is one of the first in the industry, at least in terms of our competitive set, to really get an understanding of what the static and rolling load ratings of, you know, different applications are going to be. And, you know, we go everything from down at our basic is our economy. And then what we just rolled out most recently for one of these commercial applications was a floor suitable for an electric pallet jack, which is kind of crazy because that's a lot of weight consistently being used. And to be able to confidently say, you know, we have a floor, we've got to be able to test it. And it's vetted by third parties in independent labs. So that's just one example where we're not necessarily just saying that we are, you know, quality and support and craftsmanship above all else. The other thing we're trying to do a little bit differently is ceiling panel length. And right now we can go up to 25 feet, which is not something I believe a lot of competitors are doing just based on their standard manufacturing processes.
Yeah. I appreciate you tackling that question head on, and because it's true. It's a difficulty for an awful lot of manufacturing marketers, and you know, they have to try to find a way to wrap words and proof points around what is often just a felt sense of better craftsmanship. And so that's really interesting. I wonder, in this kind of space too, I'm going to almost double speak a little bit and disagree with myself, because as I'm sitting here, it occurs to me that I'm drinking out of this steel thing, like cup, that's made by Yeti, and I am not a brand Yeti guy, but which is why they always stood out to me as something like, it seemed like they just took coolers and things that everybody else was making and did a bit of a better brand and was able to deliver a more premium experience. Oddly, has that consumer, what's happened on the consumer side in refrigeration and cooling, rubbed off on the B2B side of the category?
You know, that's a great question. I might have to come back to you with the long form answer after this. But in my initial response, I'd say consumer branding has worn off on everyone at the end of the day as consumers. And I think there's applications in the B2B space that are relevant, but the technical marketing, the product marketing still kind of differentiates itself, right? I think at the end of the day, we're all browsing, we're all being inundated with media, we're all gravitating towards things that we like for one reason or another, whether it's the shape of the cup, the name on it, or the color. And I think if we can take those sort of core psychological components and still apply them to the B2B model, understanding that it's not an immediate purchase, it is a longer form, it is going to take a relationship to really understand the value that we bring. And quite frankly, we have to show up, and the proof is in the pudding. And I think over the course of time, we can have the same brand affinity that a consumer package brand does in a different way.
This is the part where I pause, because I'm assuming Jeff's going to have a question and I don't want to ask them all, you see.
I guess my question would be, I'd like to kind of go back to the segmentation of your, the niches that you serve. How, you know, I'm not sure we spoke about how large a company Arctic Walk-ins is, but I'm assuming that you don't have a 40-person marketing team. How are you going about crafting the messages and just from a tactical level delivering marketing in all of these different areas with different messaging and probably different tactics for where those audiences are?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we think about it in terms of all of the different sort of communication or audience points and where they're going to be. So, you know, we run paid media through Google primarily, and we have keywords and ads that are speaking to the use cases around the different sectors and industries that are going to need this. Obviously, not a ton of people are necessarily searching for a pharmaceutical cold storage cooler, right? So we've got to get creative, and we've got to tap into other mediums and platforms, such as, you know, where we use one called Construct Connect. Right. And Construct Connect is essentially, you know, a database for every construction project that's happening in North America. So we're looking at that data to see what's being uploaded and actually using, you know, critical key search terms within our sectors to really get demand coming into us and publishing and reaching out to the people who are either general contractors, architects, project managers on these very specific projects. And reaching out and crafting, you know, newsletters that are personal, emails that are personal. We're creating brochures that are very highly, you know, dedicated to the service that they're serving, and really trying to, I guess, broaden the reach in terms of how we expect people to find us.
I don't know what the, you know, some, it's often said you shouldn't ask a question unless you already know the answer. and in this instance, I'm just not sure. It feels to me in some ways that the competitive benefits and the key features of this type of product maybe don't differ all that crazy amount between the different niches. Would that be accurate? Because if that is, maybe that makes it a little bit easier, at least.
It comes down to a lot of the features, accessories, and quite frankly, refrigeration that's needed. And that's where a lot of it comes in. And we work with vendors on the refrigeration side to really understand what is needed, how many people are going to be in the space, how frequently is the door going to be opened? You know, what are you trying to store? Is it food or is it medical supplies and equipment, right? And those require definitely different environments within. So that's where the engineering comes in, not just in terms of the box, but how are all these different parts going to be connected in such a way where it maintains the service that someone needs for their usage specifically.
What has been the biggest challenge then for you in speaking to a food service audience versus, say, a pharma biotech audience?
Food service audience is highly dependent upon a group of people called consultants, food service consultants, right? And they're the ones kind of coming into the space, working with a general contractor, working with the end user, as we'll call it, to really figure out. And those people have a lot of power in terms of who they spec and why, and whether it's a refrigerator or whether it's a hood or whether it's, you know, a service line. Those are the people that we're trying to reach and really help out. And, you know, because there isn't a lot of differentiation between the boxes, we have to sort of stand on merit, and we have to stand on the relationships and the quality that we've been really producing for 40 years in the industry. On the commercial side, you know, it is because of the segmentation, we have to get really granular and really critical and try and get creative with where these people are and do a lot of the outreach ourselves and really sell in what the capabilities are and then ultimately build backwards from there. And one of the recent projects I mentioned that we've just had some success on, that took almost, you know, a year to close. And that was a lot of fine tuning over the course of time. You know, food services, obviously, where it's like, how quickly can you get me something? You know, what are we waiting on? And the commercial side, especially on pharmaceutical, is longer lead times, a lot of technical components that tie in, not just to the cooler, but the overall environment that they're creating.
That's really interesting. One kind of has that middleman side of it, and the other is, you know, you can kind of lead the technical knowledge transfer piece a little bit more directly with the client.
Yeah, and that's where I think for us, you know, the sales model is also differentiated because we have people on the commercial side who are able to sell directly in, whereas on the food service side, we actually can't do that. We work with manufacturing representatives across the entire country, and those people are actually selling our product on our behalf into the dealers or into the consultants. There's so many people on the food service side. It's fascinating to try and understand how the inner workings of this. And this is where people, you know, are often taking over their, you know, their family's company who have been doing it for decades in some cases. There's no shortage of things that pop up when you're working in either space, and they each create a lot of challenges, which is why I love this.
Is that the same on the food service side if you're dealing with, you know, somebody opening a single restaurant versus, say, you know, a larger organization with locations in multiple cities?
Typically, yeah. Even if it's, you know, not quite a chain, but you've got a strong base and you're looking to expand, you know, a restaurant owner or an operator doesn't really want to take on the purchasing, the sourcing, the installing, all that equipment themselves, right? So they are going to work with a food service consultant, someone who's licensed, someone who understands this. They've been through it before. And even if it's just a single, you know, mom and pop that's trying to open up a neighborhood cafe, you know, that's also a lot of consideration for how are all these pieces going to fit together, both back of house and front of house. So they're considering all these different elements. And I think this is where when you bring in experts, it really helps simplify the process, the selection process. They understand the different brands, what they do well, what they don't. And I think it just helps everyone along the way.
Do you do any bottom-up marketing where you're kind of getting some messaging into the people who own and run the restaurants so that when they see your brand being recommended by a consultant, they're already aware of it? Or is it all net new to them and kind of brought to them from the consultant side?
It depends, I think, how long they've been in food service themselves, right? So we do try and tap into a lot of the end users that we've worked with. Jersey Mike's is one. There's a few other that, you know, draw the attention of people in the space. So while we don't go hand-to-hand combat, I would say, we do try and tap into some of the relationships that we have so we can at least bring some level of credibility and notoriety with the project that we're working on.
I typically work a little hard, at least, to try not to be too tactical on this show. But, you know, since you used to work agency side, digital marketing expertise, now working client side, and you mentioned that, you know, there's at least some dependence on paid search for lead flow, et cetera. So I want to kind of just zero in very tactically on the changes that are happening currently in the world of search. We know that AI is dramatically impacting both organic and paid search lead flow, and introducing new opportunities for optimizing for AI search, for that matter. Are you folks experiencing those? Are you experiencing those impacts now? And what steps are you taking to think about what's next or how you evolve?
Oh man, this is a never-ending, evolving conversation between myself and some of our internal team and our agency partners as well. I'd say, yeah, we're definitely, what I'm seeing is a start to lesser Google search volume in general. I think overall we're seeing some trend numbers start to play that out a little bit. So how do we combat that, or how do we, you know, pivot away from it? Not entirely pivot away from it, but start to balance it out. I still think SEO has a lot of value. I think a lot of these AI engines are pulling from websites directly. And I think there's going to be an added dependency upon quality content to really rise to the top. And I think that's going to be a focus for us in the back half of the year, is how can we continue to, not just written content, but video content specifically, really try and tap into what the new really era of search is going to be, which is AI based. And I don't have all the answers right now for you, I'll be honest with you, but I think LinkedIn is going to become extra critical for us. I think tapping into other platforms that we haven't really reached, specifically around social, and getting creative on those is going to bring a lot of added value. They're resource intensive, right? To do a really great, you know, I should say resource intensive with tools at hand, to create quality content for an Instagram or for a TikTok, which I think have, you know, audiences that, while may not be endemic to us, are interested in what we're doing. And I think that's where the creativity is going to come in. And we're going to know a lot more by the end of this year in terms of where our marketing is going to go for 2026 and beyond.
Well, you are certainly not alone when you say you don't have all the answers. I don't, if somebody does, I hope they show themselves soon, because I haven't heard of them. I do think you're right. A lot of the kind of blocking and tackling of search engine optimization still helps things rise to the top in AI search. And of course, I think even more important on things like schema and et cetera. It's an interesting time to be alive. It feels like in marketing, it seems like for the things were a little stagnant there for a while. The playbook was kind of samesies. And while the digital marketers had a different playbook than the analog marketers, and the analogs kind of almost just went away, now it's a different playbook again. Are you, I'm curious, are you, you still obviously work with agency partners. Does part of you as a marketer think that in this crazy time, it's, are you happy to be client side, or are you thinking, oh, wow, I'm missing out all this craziness that's happening over on agency side? Not that you don't get some of it anyway.
You know, now that I'm about a year in being back on the client side, I'm realizing, quite frankly, the value that agencies bring more so than ever. Because agencies, in my estimation, are supposed to be the thought leaders for their clients' respective business in some degree, right? They're looking at things trend-wise 3 to 5 years out. They're trying to anticipate what is going to happen and how they can support that client's business. So I actually have a lot more appreciation for the agency and the role they're doing. With that said, I'm very happy to be client side. It's a little bit of a different pace. You know, you guys probably know there's obviously a lot of, you know, long nights, you know, a lot of strategy sessions. Intellectually, I love that. I get a lot out of it, especially collaborating across different departments within an agency and coming up with solutions and presenting those solutions. I still really, really get a lot of just, you know, at least energy from the idea of it. But I'm happy with a little bit more of the internal kind of work through that I'm doing now. And quite frankly, it's just a challenge that I was ready for and needed to be a part of. So it's all happening the way it's supposed to.
Folks, we didn't pay Michael to say that agencies are good, just so we're clear.
Yeah, and nor did he set this up so he could tell his employer that he was thankful for being there.
All organic.
It's just an interesting time, though, to so maintain in this space, and so much is going to change over the next while. It's going to be, I think, both agencies and client-side marketers are going to have their hands full. There's no question. What do you, since we've already done a little bit of crystal ball around the notion of AI, let's get away from that. And what other big changes do you see on the horizon? What's the other thing in the back of your head?
Oh, man. I mean, I think we're all navigating a really weird time, economically and otherwise. And there's a lot of transition that's going to happen. And I think the uncertainty of the macroeconomic climate, the longer that goes on, the harder it's going to be for businesses to plan properly and resource against that. And I think there's going to be more mergers and acquisitions across the board, our space specifically. I think, you know, if we drill down even a little bit more into, you know, just the B2B environment, I think there's a ton of businesses that are ripe for opportunity that are being led by people who have been doing it for so long, but, you know, they don't really have someone to hand the baton off to. And I think that creates a massive opportunity, whether it's in refrigeration or HVAC, or just these, you know, businesses that people have kind of gravitated away from in the last 20, 25 years as they've sort of chased tech or chased SaaS or now chasing AI. And I think there's going to be really a return or a responsiveness to that, and people kind of realizing the opportunity that lies on the B2B side. And, you know, heartened, you know, entrepreneurs are going to take these on and really create some great things out of them.
Man, I love that optimism for, you know, the manufacturing industry as a whole. You know, I think that there's some really cool things happening and a renewed interest, obviously, you know, potentially driven by some of these economic factors. But I think just more broadly, people really do see the value in understanding how manufacturing works and how it impacts our world. You know, it's pretty pretty important piece.
Without a doubt. And I think, you know, because there's so much creativity that happens behind the scenes, it was hard for a long time to communicate that creativity through most of the media channels that existed. But because we've had such a, you know, just a broader distribution now of channels that are available that are mostly interest-based, right? I think we're moving away from the social component of social media and more to the interest component of social media. And I think that's going to bring a lot more attention and people to whatever craftsman or creative outlet they have. And whether that's, you know, more standard, you know, influencer marketing or more standard B2B influencer marketing, I think there's going to be an opportunity for voices and creative ones to come through.
That's a fascinating point that I had never really thought of, and that, you know, you can look at manufacturers from the outside looking in, and, you know, it could, an awful lot of people, I mean, I always hate the fact that it gets called a boring industry sometimes. And, you know, because the fact of the matter is, you second you start peeling and looking under the hood, you know, you can become endlessly fascinated with the innovation and the creativity that is happening in almost any manufacturing environment. I hadn't thought through the notion of media availability connecting with that, i.e. the media channels that we used to use in favor were kind of supportive of hiding that from us in some way, or didn't facilitate at least the exposure of it. Michael, that's a fact. We could just hit record again and do a second show on that. Really interesting.
Yeah, no, I thought that was, you know, and the notion of moving from social to interest-based media as well, you know, I see it myself, you know, just in my own habits and patterns and how I'm using the internet now compared to when Twitter was good.
goes away from a community based or you know, people that are close. Yeah, exactly, and it's much more interest based. Well, Michael, what a fascinating way to leave the show with this kind of food for thought something for I think all of our listeners to ponder. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us. It's been wonderful to have you.
Well, thank you both for having me. It's been great to chat with you guys, and I hope we can have another one soon.
That would be cool. Thanks a lot.